Let me run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. LegalShield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract fine print? Or you finally want to get that will done? LegalShield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Thinking Sideways is not brought to you by the jealous rival of Steel Wool, which is the lesser appreciated disc scrubbing tool, Sheep's Wool. Instead, it's supported by the generous contributions of people like you, our listeners, on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/thinkingsideways to learn more.
Thinking Sideways.
I don't understand.
Does not compute.
You never know.
What?
Stories of things we simply don't know the answer to.
Well, hey there, and welcome again to another episode of Thinking Sideways.
The podcast.
The podcast. I am Steve, as always, joined by...
Devin.
Joe.
You didn't sing that, Joe.
I thought we were singing today.
Okay.
Oh, wait, that's the wrong episode.
Oh, crap. Joe. Right. Next time.
Hand me my guitar.
No. So today's story... actually, before we get into today's story, today's episode is part of our summer series where we're taking some of the smaller mysteries and going over those. So that gives us some time off during the summer, and it allows us some time to research the bigger mysteries.
Yeah.
Yeah, like D.B. Cooper.
And stuff.
Dan Cooper.
And things.
Just Dan Cooper.
Okay.
Just the entire summer full of Dan Cooper.
Yeah.
The summer of Dan.
That's right.
500 Dans of summer. I'm sorry.
You are so proud of yourself.
I'm really proud of myself. I woke up at 4 o'clock this morning. I've been awake for a very long time.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's a long time.
Okay, let's talk about these man-eaters. Sorry.
Okay. Today's story is the Tsavo Man-Eaters, and this is a listener suggestion. This was suggested by David.
Okay, thanks, David.
Yeah. No, this is a fun one. I had forgotten about this until I came across it on the list.
Well, it's fun, except for the people that got eaten.
But... Shush.
Yeah, yeah.
Jeez, spoilers.
Yeah.
We got to stop doing this
show. We really do.
Yeah.
So, the Tsavo Man-Eaters are two African lions who, in 1898, who were named locally the Ghost and the Darkness, killed workers on the East Africa Railroad at the Tsavo River, which is today modern-day Tsavo National Park in Kenya.
Well, if you go to do a Google on Tsavo, it's spelled T-S-A-V-O.
Yes, it is. Now, those lions, because of what they were doing to the people who were there, they actually stopped the railroad project that was going on. And it wasn't until they were eventually killed by British Army Colonel John Patterson that the project could move forward and complete, at least the part that he was responsible for. But our mystery here, we're going to have to tell the story, but our mystery here is, why did they do it?
Why did the lions kill the humans?
Yes, not why did the British build a railroad?
I think it's because they were hungry.
Well, what motivated them, since lions aren't typically known to hunt humans?
Mm-hmm.
And they were taking out, according to the story, great swaths of people.
Well, I mean, they are cats, and cats are jerks. So maybe that.
You just alienated all of our feline listeners.
Sorry, kitties.
Since Devin doesn't have a comeback for that, we'll go ahead and just start the story. In 1896, the British had decided to build a railroad in their East African colony, and that was going to run from the port city of Mombasa, which is in modern-day Kenya. And then that rail line was going to run all the way to Lake Victoria and then go on to Uganda. And officially, it was named the Uganda Railroad, but unofficially, it was called the Lunatic Line, and that's because there was a lot of people in Parliament who didn't think that it was worth it, and they shouldn't be doing it. They described it as the railroad that ran from nowhere to nowhere.
It's kind of like that high-speed rail project in California.
Yeah.
Something like that. Officially, what the British were hoping was that it would encourage people to move into the interior of Africa and provide a method for transporting trade products between Africa and Europe. And by people, I mean British citizens, because it was a colony, and they wanted to get citizens in there, because that's how they were going to tame the, what did they call it? It was the Darkest Africa.
Darkest Africa?
Yeah, I think that was what they called it. They considered it a land of savages at the time, is the way that you see it described.
It was, I mean, again, it was like the late 1800s.
Yes, yeah. So this is based on writings at that time.
Before
that was their description of
it. Yeah, I don't know that the term was actually based on the complexions of the people who lived there.
No.
I think it was more like sort of the, kind of Heart of Darkness kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like, exactly.
Yeah.
It was a hard place to get to. Unofficially, this railroad was also intended to provide an alternative method to what the standard method of getting things from the interior of Africa to the coast was, which was on foot, which is a long, long walk. It's a long hike.
And you gotta have a lot of people to carry all that stuff.
You do, and porters aren't cheap. And because cheap labor is kind of important when you're trading, there was a blossoming slave trade.
Of course.
So there was tons of slaves that were being picked up in that entire region, and then they would be walking in and out until eventually they died.
Oh, so we're talking cheap as free, not like underpaid.
Well, not quite free.
Well, you got to buy the slave. So
okay.
It's not technically free.
You're not paying wages.
Correct.
No.
So therefore, you're not gonna spend a bunch of money on people. You just get your product, you hoof it into town. If somebody dies on the way,
oops.
Whoops. Yeah. You're out whatever you paid for them, then it's on back down the road.
I wonder how many slaves it took to carry a car.
That's the weirdest question you've asked me in a while. It did eventually help bring the slave trade down. It wasn't the reason that the slave trade would eventually collapse.
The train line helped the train line.
The train line, yeah. Because if you can throw things on a train,
it's way cheaper and easier.
And
less morally wrong.
Oh, there's that too.
Yeah, for the people who cared.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people who were buying and selling slaves typically probably don't have a compunction to worry about that.
Yeah, a lot of people still, back in those days, thought it was okay.
Yeah, it was standard fare.
Yeah.
So they're going to build this railroad, and thousands of laborers are brought in, and they are Indian and Chinese. So
Chinese?
Yeah, it was Indians and there was Chinese brought in.
Mm.
They were all, as a group, the British referred to them as coolies. Mm. They were their laborers.
Did the lions have a preference for one group or the other?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
So the railroad itself was going to be a total of 580 miles long. And when it was done, it crossed valleys and rivers. Crazy, though, it took 30 years to complete. Mm-hmm. It started in 1896. It reached Nairobi in 1899, Lake Victoria in 1901, and then it took almost 27 more years for it to eventually get to Kampala, Uganda.
That's a long time.
I think that there was some political tensions going on. I think that mostly it was, and I don't mean political tensions in the area. I mean political tensions in Britain, in the Parliament, of why are we dumping more money into this? Mm-hmm. So that's why it didn't get very well funded at that point.
Okay.
So we're going to go to 1898. This is 2 years after the construction has begun.
Okay.
The rail line has reached the Tsavo River in Kenya, which is about 130 miles away from Mombasa.
That's actually pretty good progress.
It actually is pretty good progress for a rail line that's being built by hand. Mm. And what they have to do is they have to cross a river. So they build a temporary bridge so that they can keep working on the rail line. And then in place of that temporary bridge, they pull it down and they're going to start putting in the actual bridge.
Like they did with the Selwood Bridge.
Right. So, because why do you want to wait all this time for the bridge to be done when you can keep making forward progress?
Mm-hmm.
Makes total sense. So what they do is in March of that year, they bring in British Army Colonel John Patterson. And he's brought in from India because he was great with bridges. And that was his thing.
Nerd alert.
Yeah.
During the construction of the bridge, like I said, they're going to be building the bridge, and the rail line itself is going to keep moving forward, the leading edge of the line as they're constructing it. And this, what will happen is that the camps, because the men who are working on the line have to sleep at night, so they set up temporary camps, and their camps from the bridge forward over time start to spread out about over a 20-mile area.
Okay.
So it's a pretty big swath of area.
Yeah.
Well, it's not, but I think it's within a couple of days to a week of Patterson arriving that men start disappearing.
Meaning he's a serial killer?
I was going to say, no one immediately was like, oh, crap.
No, because all of the workers come to him and say they're being dragged out of their tents at night by a lion. And he's like, no, that's not really happening. I don't really believe you. And eventually, he does go with them. They find a body. And I've read the accounting of it. And if you, from the description of it, it was pretty obvious that it was a big cat that must have been doing it. So at that point, he's on board. And eventually, the workers would figure out that there wasn't just one, but there was actually two lions.
Not to be racist, but how could they tell it was two different lions?
Oh, wait, okay, so you actually have a real question.
It like a joke, but it's an actual question.
When you see two lions at the same time, there's more than one.
Okay, I mean, I guess, I just thought that male lions hunted alone.
Apparently these two sort of had an alliance.
They were brothers?
It was later determined that they were brothers.
Mm.
But the thing is, and we're going to talk a little bit more about these kind of lions in just a moment, but males will be with a pride of females. And if a male doesn't have a pride, then he's just going to rove.
Mm.
Sometimes males will work together to hunt because it's mutually beneficial, at least for a certain amount of time. So it's not completely unheard of to have a couple of males just kicking around at the same time together.
Okay.
It's actually, it'd be really handy for hunting because, I mean, you just, you know, like go spook some gazelles and drive them towards your bro,
yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, that's why, you know, wolves hunt in packs.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of animals hunt in packs because it's
big
easier.
Big cats do it all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except for usually not two males.
No. But, and so let's go ahead and talk about this because the lions that are in question here are Tsavo lions, and they're different than the lions that I think most people think of or are familiar with, which is the lions of the Serengeti. So there's some physical differences and there's some behavioral differences.
They're a lot bigger for one thing.
They are. They are much bigger. And they also don't have manes. So a normal, the Serengeti lion has that big giant mane that's so iconic, but these lions don't. And it's not 100% understood why. There's some ideas that maybe it's because of the fact that that region is hotter than the Serengeti.
Yeah, I think that probably is the reason.
Well, that's a good reason. Or there's also the idea that because the landscape in that area is very scrubby, it's scrub brush and it's very thorny scrub. So if an animal is squeezing through brush, either the mane is going to get caught or you're going to get all kinds of stuff caught in the mane.
They have a little bit of a mane.
So they do have scruff occasionally if they have a mane. I loved it. I was looking at a drawing, and they show just in front of the ears. They literally call it the sideburn and the beard, because it's almost never fully encompassing or going all the way around the neck like you see traditionally.
Right. But I guess these two, I was just looking at pictures, they had a little tiny, little bit of mane.
Well, and that's the hard part, though, is that if you look at the pictures of these particular lions in the, I can't remember what museum they're in right now, that those are the skins of those lions after they were rugs for about 20 years.
Yeah.
So they weren't in great condition when they were brought in. If you look at the photos from after they were shot, it doesn't look like there's a whole lot there then.
It looks like
it's also not, they're old images. It's really hard to tell.
Yeah, but apparently they were skillfully restored, and now they're stuffed and look like the real thing.
They do, except they're smaller.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. It's good.
They're
point.
Much smaller than they would be normally because of the fact that they were skinned to make into rugs and not to make into replicas.
Yeah, exactly.
Or mannequins or whatever you want to call it. I can't think of the right word.
Yeah, they had trimmed away parts of the skins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there's, aren't they in Chicago?
The Field Museum in Chicago.
Oh, okay.
Illinois.
Oh, thanks for looking that up.
I knew it was Field something. I can't remember what it was. Let's talk a little bit more about Tsavo lions, though. There's a couple of things more to talk about here. We talked about the fact that they're larger than the Serengeti lions, and it's believed that that might be that they're actually a more primitive version of the lion. Because if you see, apparently if you look at the drawings from like the Egyptians, because there was lions running around 2,000 years ago in that region, they look the same. They don't have a mane and they're very large in the illustrations.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the reasons. The other thing is that these lions are, the males especially, are notably super aggressive because they have really high levels of testosterone. So they are prone to, their automatic reaction is to attack, just because they're always kind of, they're dudes. They're totally worked up all the time.
Okay.
That's all I got.
I know some dudes like that.
Yeah. So we'll go back to the story, though. As I said, the workers were spread over a large area, again, about 10, 20 miles. And the lions started to attack. And they were attack primarily at night. They didn't show up every night. So it wasn't as if it was every single night they were there.
A half a human is a lot of...
Yeah,
meal.
I would say a human would make a couple of days good eating.
The other thing, though, is that when they showed up, they were much more likely to attack the livestock as they were the people. Because you got to remember, it's a camp of workers who have to have work animals or draft animals, and they've also got to feed themselves. So there's tons of livestock around. So it's whatever seemed most convenient. So
whatever's easy pickings.
Mm-hmm. Whatever was easy picking,
that
you
makes
got
sense.
Yeah, so I think if I was putting up my tent, if I was one of them workers, I would like stick goats and cows all around it.
So that they would get it and you wouldn't.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is that they did, everybody was trying to keep the lions out. So what the coolies would do is they would build fences. They were called boma fences. And they would use the local acacia, which is a super thorny tree and bush, and they'd build fences out of that. So it's, you know, it's a barbed wire fence of nature at this point. And they would also light big campfires and keep those fires going all night long in the hopes that the sound and the light would keep the lions from coming in. It didn't work so well because the lions kept getting through the fences
and kept causing havoc.
Yeah, they were.
They were damn smart.
There's a really interesting account where a lion actually got into a tent where a guy was sleeping, and in the scuffle and panic, ended up grabbing the mattress, the sleeping mattress the guy had, and running away with that. And so the guy got away, and the lion got a couple of, I'm guessing a couple of yards, realized it didn't have its prey, and dropped it and continued
on. I feel like that might say something bad about the state of the workers, that they were easily mistaken for a mattress.
Well, huh? I think it's this, in the dark, in a tent, in the scuffle, with the smells are your primary. It's
true.
A sleeping pad that you sleep on, or a mattress thing.
That's true.
You're sweating on it all
warm.
The time.
Well, maybe it is. I don't know.
It's gonna be
you're warm. Right. Okay, you're right. A mattress and a human are interchangeable.
They are.
Of course, yeah.
That's why I have one sitting in my cube right now at the office. Everybody thinks I'm working diligently.
Yep.
Wait till they realize it's Serta. All right. So April of that year, at this point, Patterson's been there for about a month or so, and now the rail line is extended 40 miles away from the Tsavo, and there's only a couple hundred workers left at the camp who are building the bridge. And because this is where, you know, the bulk of the humans have moved on and the camp is around the bridge, that's where the lions start to focus their attacks.
That's where the goodies are.
Exactly. And so Patterson, he was brought in from India, where he had done a whole bunch of tiger hunting. And so he considered himself a hunter of big cats. What he would do is he would climb a tree at night, and he would sit in the tree all night long, hoping that he could spot and then shoot one of the lions. Obviously, he didn't have a whole lot of luck with it. He's in a tree one night, the lions show up, they get into the hospital tent, and they take somebody away. So he says, move the hospital tent. So they do. The lion goes to the new location of the hospital tent and takes somebody else away. I think it was the water boy.
Mm-hmm.
Takes him away. So then they do it a third time. They move the tent a third time. And I'm like, why is he doing it? Does he not realize that lions can smell? Like, yeah. Why are you moving it?
Yeah, they're not stupid.
They're not stupid. But
these ones particularly.
And what he did this time, when he moved the hospital tent the third time, is he put up this rail car contraption that he had designed, and it had cattle in it. And the idea, I think, was that to get the lion in, shut the door so the lion couldn't get out, and then you could, you know, shooting fish in a barrel, lions in a car.
Yeah.
Kind of the same thing for him, except it didn't work out. The lion got a cow, got in, got the cow, got it out of the car, but then couldn't figure out how to get it through the fence and eventually took off through the fence. So when what happened though is that Patterson and the camp doctor, because it was near where the hospital site was, were out there at night, and the lion at that point, instead of trying to continue to drag the cow out of the fence, turned around and started stalking these two guys.
Yeah, they might be more fiddable under the fence, huh?
Yeah, yeah. So obviously it's very aggressive when, hey, I've just killed something, I can't get it. I'll go kill something else.
I'm still hungry.
I'm totally still hungry. So it did eventually attempt to attack them, and this is where Patterson shot at it, and he said he managed to wound it by shooting one of its teeth, and that scared it away enough. And the whole tooth thing is supported with the actual jaw of one of the lions. There is a broken tooth. Now, whether that tooth was shot by him or broken in some other manner,
there is some contention about that.
That's in dispute, but
it seems weird.
It seems like a hell of a lucky shot.
Well, it seems like it would
kill the lion. You shoot him in the head, basically.
Well, not if you shoot it from the side or
and it grazes it,
or if it goes out. Think of if it went through the cheek.
Yeah.
I suppose it could have been deflected.
Yeah. I mean, there's a bunch of ways that this could happen.
Yeah.
Either way, like I said, I think that mostly it was right there and he shot and it scared the holy crap out of him and it took off. But that's just my opinion. So, of course, okay, so we've got the whole, he shot it in the mouth. The lions then take off for a while and they leave the camp for several weeks. And I'm sure Patterson is just relieved and thinking, well, yay, I got rid of them.
Scared them off. I did it.
Yeah. Unbeknownst
to him. That's what British accents sound like, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Perfectly, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Unbeknownst to him, what the lions had been doing during that couple of weeks was actually stalking some of the other construction camps that were farther away. And They do eventually return to the bridge site. This is several weeks later. One of the cats enters and drags a worker away. And these, and both of them show up to the body of this worker. And this is how brazen they get after a while. They only drag the body 30 feet away from the, or 30 yards away from the camp, and then begin to have their meal. So they're obviously not intimidated by people, which at this point, yeah, I'd be thinking of a career change.
Yeah, me too. I wouldn't be staying there.
No, not at all. And so this continues for months. These lions can keep coming back, and they keep making a kill and taking something, whether it be human or a four-legged critter, away as a meal. We get to the 1st of December, and at this point, most of the workers board the train and they leave. They've kind of had enough. This is not worth it, and they're gone. Yeah, there's some people. That. Yeah, it makes total sense. There's some people left. There's some workers who are going to try and stay on. On the 9th of December, one of the lions manages to kill a donkey that's in camp. Mm. And Patterson sees this as his opportunity. And what he does is he has a bunch of guys go around behind it and then come at it, making as much noise as they can to startle it, to scare it out into the open so that he can, you know, he shoot it. Well, he does manage to hit it. He does manage to wound the lion, but it gets away. But he's pretty sure that it's going to come back because it wants to get the meal, the donkey.
Yeah.
So
I would.
What does he do? He builds a platform that he can sit on and be in a perch. He waits. Lo and behold, the lion comes back. But this time it doesn't come back for the donkey. It instead is it approaches Patterson on his perch instead of going to the donkey. Yeah.
Are we doing that thing that we do when we listen to Steve's stories where we do like the grandiose storytelling of the night and then go back and like talk about stuff?
So here's the thing is that from what I can tell, the majority of the story comes from Patterson himself. So the details, the accounts of how it happened, this was something that happened a lot of guys would do, is you would be off somewhere and you'd write a bit of an adventure that had happened. And you'd sell it to newspapers. Mm-hmm. And it seems that that's what Patterson was doing. And then eventually he collected those and he put those into a book that he wrote. And that's where almost all of this story is sourced from.
So
now the lions are real. And it is the fact that they were killing people is real. Mm-hmm. Now,
they were stalking me and they came after me and I shot its canine tooth off. That's
all Patterson.
Okay.
That's all Patterson. We only have one source of this. That.
And there's no reason not to believe him. But
no, I mean,
there are some reasons to not believe
him. There is. Okay. So let's talk about this briefly.
Yeah.
Let me finish what happens to this lion.
Yes.
And then I want to talk about something to follow up on that. What happens with this lion is that it's circling underneath him while he's in his perch. And he goes ahead and takes more shots at it. He does manage to hit it. He hits it two more times and manages to kill it. So he took a total of 3 bullets to put this creature down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to talk real briefly about his writings and his book.
Mm-hmm.
Did either of you get a chance? It's all available online to skim through any of that.
Yeah, no, actually, I did not.
Okay, so it's not the greatest read in the world. But what's very funny is that about the first third to half of the book is dedicated to this story. And then after that, it's all his accounts of hunting big cats. So he becomes the man-eater killer.
Mm.
So he goes hunting after lions. He starts hunting tigers again.
So he's like a dentist's son.
Something like that. Except that, like, when you get into his stories, it's, I shot the beast, and it leapt back up and charged back at me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he always describes these things as if they are just amazingly resilient and impervious to bullets. You know, the bullet went right through it, but it didn't phase it, and it kept running at me.
That stuff does happen, actually.
That does happen, but when you read one after the next that has the same kind of descriptions of the events, that's when I worry a little bit about it. So some of this may have, you know, I don't know how much he, I don't want to say inflated.
Embellished
the story.
Bedazzled.
Yeah. The dazzle factor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Tiger hunting especially is dangerous. I saw this incredible video. It was like a first person shot kind of thing. Somebody was holding a camera and riding on the back of an elephant, I assume in India.
Mm-hmm.
And there's
it runs up on the elephant?
Yeah, suddenly it just comes charging out of the grass, and man, just like, bam, he's on the elephant, come up the side of the elephant, and that's the end of it.
Yeah.
And so I assume whoever was holding the camera died.
I think I remember that one, and I don't think that person died. I think that's just where the video broke.
We should just make clear, if it's not abundantly clear already, we are not advocating hunting of game like this.
No.
Horrible.
Well, if they're actually killing people, then I can sort of
sure.
See,
if it's know? Like I have to put this animal down for safety, fine. Yeah. That's a totally different thing.
And we're talking about a late 19th century event. Mm-hmm. This was commonplace at the time. Yeah. It was believed. Everybody believed that this was okay. There's tons of these animals. We can't. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I just mean that as we're starting to talk about, you know, it's really dangerous. It's tiger hunting.
It is dangerous.
Well, tiger hunting is dangerous. So don't
That story Joe's talking about, I don't think that's an actual tiger hunt. That is just somebody on the back of an elephant.
No,
it could have been that too. I don't know.
I just want to make sure that everyone knows that we are not killing things.
I appreciate I agree with you there.
No, I don't want
to. Okay, so what happened to the second lion?
Okay, so at this point, we've only got one lion. And a couple of nights later, it comes back to camp and it attacks two goats. And so Patterson decides, well, you know what? I evidently it's got a taste for goats. I'm going to put a couple of more goats out. And he ties three goats out to a railroad tie, or at least a partial railroad tie. And if anybody's picked up a railroad tie,
they're pretty heavy.
They're friggin' heavy. Well, this lion shows up, kills one of the goats, and then drags it and the railroad tie away.
Well, presumably also the other two goats.
As I reread this, I'm wondering if maybe it was three goats tied to three individual railroad ties.
That would make more sense, yeah.
Probably. So they go ahead and they, he takes shots at it because he's such a good shot. He puts like 3, 4, 5 shots at it, but he had never managed to hit it.
It was dark.
I'm being a little bit of a jerk to Patterson. It was dark at night. There wasn't a whole lot of light. But the next day, he and several workers follow the trail, and they find the lion. It ran off. So at this point, he goes ahead and he builds himself another platform.
Because the other one was bad?
Well, they were both hunting people
in
the camps.
Got it.
It wasn't like Billy Lion always stays at camp and Timmy Lion always goes and hunts the people. They were both doing it. So he builds himself another perch. He's sitting on the perch that night, and the lion returns, and he does manage to shoot it twice. Evidently, he had a double barrel gun, and the lion walked directly underneath his perch, and he, simply enough, pointed down and pulled both triggers and shot it.
That must have been quite a kick.
It had to have been a hell of a kick.
Because those guns, those big game guns in Africa, there's those double-barreled ones.
They're huge.
They're chambered for enormous rounds.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he shoots it, but he doesn't actually kill it, and it takes off.
That's a tough little kitty.
They are, and this lion stays away for another 10 days. At this point, they're thinking, well, it must have died from its wounds. Except that then on the 29th of December, it returns and it tries to pull a worker who's sleeping in a tree out of the tree. The guy manages to not be taken. So Patterson says, okay, well, it likes this tree. You go sleep somewhere else. I'm going to climb up into the tree. And it does comes back to that tree, and he manages to get another two shots into it, at which point it runs away again. In the morning, they follow the trail of blood, and they do find the lion, and apparently when they got to it, I'm guessing they must have found it kind of cornered because it charged them. And he dumped so many bullets into it. He said he shot it 5 or 6 times.
Fast reloader, or did he have people?
He had multiple guns.
Oh, okay.
He had guys who were carrying loaded weapons. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so he managed to put 5 or 6 shots into it. So a total of like 9 bullets.
Maybe 10.
I just like the idea of a guy being like, yeah. You 7 people carry my guns. No, don't shoot them. Don't help me. Just hand them to me.
Mm-hmm.
You are the worker. I'm
the hero.
I'm the hero.
Yeah.
I'm the protagonist of this story, damn it.
Yeah, and
It might be that those people, none of them had any experience shooting, though. So
I mean,
probably
absolutely. And yes, it is like taking that story a little far, but I just like the image of him saying, like, no, don't help me.
Yeah.
Well, and can you see him taking two shots as the lion is running at him? He's like, bang, bang. Holds the gun back and is waiting for somebody to take it, and
that's
then
why
hit
I mean,
him another
and they run
one.
Away.
Yeah, why? Like, you know, a lion is charging you. I don't know why your initial reaction wouldn't be, "I have a gun that's loaded. I will aim and pull." Yeah, there's a lot of kick, you know, blah blah blah. Mm. But if you know, if seven guns are going off with double barrels at once, the chances of hitting that animal are pretty dang good.
Instead, what a lot of the accounts were, you know, what the primary method of getting away from an attacking lion was?
Run,
back up,
climb a tree. Mm-hmm. It was so funny. This is another thing I picked up from his book. And then I turned around, and so-and-so, who had my gun, had lost his nerve, and I saw him 10 feet up the nearest tree. Like, mm-hmm. they would do that. So to be able to stand there and hand this guy gun after gun, that actually takes a lot of willpower to expect not to be just obliterated by this angry cat that's running at you.
It might be that there wasn't any tree nearby to climb up either, so they had the cat had no choice. Maybe
it's also funny to me because I'm pretty sure lions do climb trees.
They're cats, they
I'm
can
not
climb.
Totally sure why they would say they can't get me up here, definitely not.
Well, yeah, but if there's more than one of you, if you're the first up the tree, then probably you'll get it.
That's true.
And there's the fact that when you're smaller and lighter, you can go up farther mm-hmm. than the lion can before
it
gets kind of...
That's my advantage this world. I can escape lions faster, or at least higher than anyone else.
Well, true.
As long as you can jump up and get the branch,
you're
kind of short. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Okay, so at this point, Patterson has killed both of the lions. He is triumphant. He finishes his bridge.
Hooray.
And he goes on, like I said, he writes a book, and he does all this stuff to kind of make a living, in a sense, on his deeds. He says that these lions killed at least, if not more, than 135 men in the 9 months that they were stalking everybody at the camp.
That seems like a lot.
It's an awful lot.
It really does. That would be, if you do the math, that is one person every other day during the time frame.
For 9 months.
I personally feel that more likely what's happening is that people are getting they're scared out of their minds and they're bailing, they're leaving, and you go, oh, well, where is he? I don't know. The lion must have got him.
Mm-hmm. It also would be if there was some kind of shady, you know, if the workers were kind of like indentured workers or something like that, it would be a good way to escape without people going after your family.
Maybe,
but it was Imperial Britain, so it's not like they would turn around and say, your son escaped ran away from the work. They didn't seem to be practicing slavery. I mean, they were trying to get rid of slavery in the area.
No, I don't mean slavery, but I just mean, you know, if there was some sort of deal that was set up, like, I'm working off my debt or something like that.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It'd be a really easy way to be like, you know what? A lion probably took me.
Maybe. I don't know if that's what the arrangement was, though.
I don't either. I don't know.
I do want to point out, though, with this 135 number, that it's probably wrong, as we've already been talking about.
Yeah.
There is some tests that were done with science that I totally don't understand, but they did tests on the skin and the hair of the lions. And they were looking for Delta 13C and Nitrogen 15. And somehow use that to determine how many people each of the lions had eaten.
Versus other meats. Like,
right.
You know, pigs, goats, whatever.
Yeah, and they figured out that one of them must have eaten 10 people and the other one must have eaten 25. So one of them was more likely to kill and eat a person than the other one. I'm guessing the other one was more interested in the goats and the horses and the cattle and donkeys and everything else that was there.
You know, a goat's a lot easier to carry away.
And, true, but
and
it, you know,
a pretty good little snack.
Yeah, but you got to eat three goats in a night.
Yeah.
They're not that big.
I don't know. For you think one goat would not be enough?
I don't think a goat would be enough.
Really?
But that's just me.
I think a goat is the same as half a person.
Or a third, at least.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
When was the last time you were around a goat?
I think
they are nothing
more
but sinew and guts. and bone.
Sorry, I don't eat goat a whole lot.
Well,
yeah, me neither.
I have. There's not a whole lot to them.
All right.
Okay. Well, you just buy a six pack.
And that's what the lion was doing.
Yeah.
Why is the six pack tied to this heavy, heavy thing?
Yeah.
That lion must have been so peeved.
Yeah.
Okie doke. Well, that is the end of the story. So at this point now, we need to get into the theories, because our original question is, what was it that was driving these two lions to be attacking humans
so much? Exactly, yeah.
There's a number of theories. The first theory that we're going to talk about is the slave trade, because as we said in the beginning, slave trade was pretty active in the area. And one of the very well-known behaviors of slave traders is that if a slave dies, you just drop them where they fall. You leave them there and you keep on going. You don't bother to give them a burial or anything like that.
Of course not, yeah.
And
you might dump them like off the trail a little bit so
maybe,
the other slaves
yeah.
aren't demoralized.
But lions are scavengers. They have no problem with scavenging.
They can be scavengers.
Yeah. So they're, you know, if they are wandering along and, oh, hey.
Somebody left a snack here for
them. There's a thing there, and, you know, the hyenas have already started ripping into it, and I bet you I could get some food out of it.
Yeah, just like, you know, if I'm walking down the street and I see a Twinkie on the sidewalk, you know, I mean, I'd go for it.
That's so gross, dude. So gross. A, that you're eating Twinkies, and B, off the sidewalk.
Yeah.
I know.
Okay, let's keep going. The other thing about the Tsavo River is apparently, according to the reading, it was the river itself was a bit of a dumping ground for bodies because I presume that it's because the route that they took followed the river. So if somebody dies, you just chuck the body in. So bodies were floating down the river all the time. That's my presumption on that. So the theory here goes that these lions, at this point, they're used to having human remains around to scavenge on. So they come to consider humans as a normal food source. And if you think about it, if there's, you know, let's say there's a bunch of slaves tied up at night in a camp and you just come running in and they don't fight back and they can't run away. Well, that's the best cafeteria ever.
Yeah.
Pretty true. Sweet thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So they would at that point consider, people as a food source. And now the camps are setting up. So you've got this abundance of humans. That's great. And then add to this. Oh, and look, they've also brought along all these other animals, you know, like we talked about before, the goats, the donkeys, the horses, the cows, all of that stuff. That it's just, it's too tempting.
Well
all these things that I know how to eat are here.
Yeah, you totally can't blame them. I mean, I would take advantage of a great opportunity like that.
Yeah, and well, then that's the theory, though. I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are on this in terms of the scavenging, but this theory says that basically they got used to eating people, so people are on the menu.
I guess for me, it just seems like it's a leap to go from this is a super easy thing that doesn't fight back at all. It's just easy meat that's laying there to go to this is a thing that fights back and I have to like break into a camp and be really smart just because it's meat that's similar to what they're used to instead of targeting their normal, I guess, natural prey. Because, I mean, it's not as though there was a shortage of normal prey for them around the area, right?
Well, there might have been.
We'll talk about that.
Okay.
There is something.
Because if that's the case, then yes, I agree, you know.
But if you also think about it, if they're used to walking up and seeing a body and then snacking on that body, and now they walk up and that body is still laying on the ground, it just happens to be in this weird contraption that humans call a tent. Well, then you walk in and then you grab the body as you normally do. And, oh, it's struggling. Well, I better run away with it.
I better shake it by the neck real hard and break its neck.
Because that's the thing is that, I guess I never really thought about it, though I knew it, is the way that lions kill. Their natural method of killing is to grab the throat and clamp down and suffocate while at the same time thrashing about to break the neck. And so it's either breaking the neck or suffocating their prey. And that makes sense when you think about it, but I had never thought it. So that would explain why, you know, they come and they're like, do the quick clamp and run. The thing is going to die.
Yeah.
Let's go to a sort of similar theory. So our second theory is similar. It's described as partial cremations. And I will be honest that I only saw that in one or two places. I saw the term partial cremations in one place. I saw some other stuff that we'll talk about this in Patterson's book. But I have to admit that I tried to get a better sense of what partial cremations meant. I'm doing research on it. All I can figure is that somebody tried to cremate the body to light a fire, but they didn't do a good job of it, so the body didn't burn.
Well, I would guess it's the lack of like a pyre.
It takes a lot of wood to actually totally consume it.
And there's not a whole lot of wood in that area.
Yeah.
So I would assume that somebody set up a kind of abbreviated, if you will, little pile and set them on fire and watch for a little while, and then you walk away assuming it'll continue to burn, and it goes out and it's just a half burned corpse.
Yeah.
In the desert.
And related to that, the other place that I saw some descriptions of not exactly the same thing, but in Patterson's reading or in his book, I came across some stuff about the fact that there were poorly dug graves. So people would try to bury somebody, but they would only, you know, dig down a little bit and then cover the body up. And then other scavengers would come along and dig it up.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
absolutely.
Patterson, he says these things, he blaming the people who were burying the body in kind of a derogatory way. But really, I think it's just that they buried a body, not expecting critters to come dig it back up, and critters dig it back up. And so this, again, is following the same lines as the last one of, well, now they're used to eating people because they've been scavenging on them.
It's possible they were slaves too. I mean, it's possible that slaves weren't actually just unceremoniously dumped, but kind of haphazardly given some kind of something.
Right. Yeah. That's absolutely possible.
Or workers. I mean, it's not unlikely that a lot of workers were dying while they were working on this.
If they send you out to dig a grave for somebody and bury the body, you know, people tend to cut corners a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might be tempted to bury it 2 or 3 feet down and just take the rest of the day off and just say you spent all day digging the grave.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah.
Well, and building railroads was not a safe occupation.
Oh, no.
People died all the freaking time.
Yeah.
I actually kind of wonder if that's part of the number that he had in terms of where that 135 number came, that
maybe
somebody died and they didn't want to say, oh, well, we accidentally had this pile of stuff fall on him. They just said, oh, well, the lion took him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's entirely plausible as well. The next theory that we have, which we alluded to a little bit, this is the one that we were kind of talking about, which is the food source. The theory is cattle plagues. The Tsavo lions are one of the only animals that are able to take down Cape buffalo. And if you don't know what a Cape buffalo is, it's kind of like a water buffalo. They're not actually related, but it looks like a water buffalo, only bigger. Hmm. They're huge creatures, and there's tons of meat on them. The problem is, as a food source for lions, they kind of suck because they're just as likely to injure or kill the lion as not. So they're very tough to take down.
I would definitely be looking for easier sources of food.
Well, and lucky for the lions, we as humans love cows, and we brought a whole bunch of cows to the area. So the lions would have said, well, the cow is much easier to eat.
Doesn't have horns.
Well, yeah, it does. But the thing is that cows are not very good at fighting back, so chances are good that they're easier to take down, except that there was, in the 1890s, a rash of cattle plagues. It is Rinderpest disease, which is basically a fatal disease for cattle. They get lesions and they have problems in their sinuses, and it's really kind of gross. So only if you've got a strong stomach do you look at some of this, because it's not pretty. And it takes them down pretty quickly. And it was taking out entire herds at this time in the mid to late 1890s. So if these lions have now learned to hunt cows and, hey, the cows are no longer available and I'm starving.
Yeah. And then all these people show up.
And I have all these people show up that are making all this noise, and they smell, and there's blood, and they're cooking. Well, then that would explain why they would go there.
Sure. If the game all died.
Yeah.
But I think is it Rinderpest or Rinderpest?
I said Rinderpest, but it could be Rinderpest. Yeah. I'm not positive.
Somebody out there look it up and send us an email.
Yeah.
But I think it killed other game. It didn't just kill off the cows, right? Didn't it kill other game besides the
even
cows?
Toed ungulates.
Yeah.
So that means critters that have cloven hooves. So two toes. So it killed giraffes. It killed the antelope. It actually killed some of the Cape buffalo. And what was the other one?
The devil.
No, not the devil. Mm. It did not kill the robot devil. Mm. But it killed off all of these other animals that, it was deer was the other one, because there are deer in the area. So it was killing off all these prey animals. So it's not just the cows that are gone at this point. There's a lot of animals that are disappearing because it's spreading through the entire area.
Mm, that sucks.
Here's my problem with this idea. So this is the first one that I'm going to say I kind of call bunk on, is that if that were the case, because this was all over the region, why is it only these two lions that we know about who were just going on these giant human killing sprees?
I guess my question would be, how close to human populations were other lions? You know, because this, it seems like the sort of thing where lions at this point, if they have, you know, few prey options, are going to go for whatever's easiest and closest.
Uh-huh.
They're not going to make 50, 60, 70 mile treks to find a population of humans to get a human in a hut. That's like you have to break in and there's like all this other stuff.
You get to pick the lock.
Versus like these two, it just so happened that a huge group of humans were just walking through their territory, camping in easy access tents. So, you know, for me, it doesn't bother me that much, I guess, because I presume most people in that area were, you know, had huts and things like that. More permanent structures that would be harder for a lion to get into versus these workers.
That's a good point. It's a permanent structure.
Right. They're living in a tent and they're like easy access because they've just wandered right into the middle of these two lions' territory. You know, that sort of thing, I guess.
And do the, were there a lot of people living in that area?
So it wasn't heavily populated.
It was nowhere to nowhere, remember?
I mean, the area was very rural. There were cattle everywhere. But if you think about it, a huge herd can be overseen by a very small group of people. So, I mean, and villages aren't typically all that huge.
And as you said, these lions even, in their most aggressive state, were just as likely to go after livestock as they were humans.
True.
So if there's humans living in huts and livestock out, it wouldn't be that weird that we wouldn't have reports from this time that if there were livestock that were healthy in villages, that lions were taking those. That wouldn't be...
Plus, the indigenous people who were living in that area probably weren't writing the accounts of the lion stealing their goat and sending it to the British newspapers.
No, they were like, oh, yeah, duh, a lion stole another goat. Weird.
Part of the cost of doing business.
Yeah. Right. No, that makes a ton of sense. Okay.
But they aren't.
I retract my distaste for this theory.
So I like this theory, actually.
Well, let's go to a theory that I'm going to see if you really like. Our next theory is bad teeth. So these lions had to go see a dentist.
I've heard this.
There are some researchers, and I apologize. I failed to write down the name of these two gentlemen, but there are two researchers who have done a lot of studies on lions in general, and part of their studies were on the Tsavo lions. And they say that they examined the skulls of these two, and one of them had missing canines. It was the upper left, I want to say, the canines were missing, and that those were there, and then they did some x-rays on the skull and found what were signs of lesions in the jawbone. So that led them to believe that it was probably a very painful injury, and that it had probably happened at least 2 years before the animal's death, and so that would impede its ability to hunt prey as normal, because we talked about this before. A lion has to be able to clamp down with its jaw on the throat and hang on. Well, if there's a set of canines and one side missing, you aren't going to have as good of a bite.
Mm. It says people are slower and weaker than, say, gazelles.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
Yes, we don't fight nearly as hard
as
a gazelle.
And our hide is much softer.
Yes. Our skin is much thinner. Mm-hmm. Puts the lotion on.
I was going to make that joke.
Sorry, I beat you to that. So then we go to, so it wasn't actually, I think I was wrong with the upper left in terms of the missing canines, but it doesn't matter because I'm now looking here because they did examine the skull of the second lion, and that lion had fractures in its jaw, which were around the teeth in the upper left. So that's where I was getting the upper left from.
Well, I mean, I guess
so. The idea here, though, is that again, it hurts and it's not able to hunt effectively.
It would explain if they were brothers, if they were related, right? It wouldn't be so crazy that they both had this thing, but it would also explain why, as they matured, they continued to rely on each other because they weren't effective hunters, so they had to work as a team to be effective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't hate it.
Yeah, it's, no, actually, it's
I don't love it, but I don't hate it.
It's not unusual. Typically, when an animal does start attacking human populations, like say a mountain lion here in the States, it's usually because he's old and sick and he just can't do his, he can't go after the normal stuff anymore, yeah. Like deer.
But that's the thing, is that these lions, they weren't old. So that's one thing, is they weren't old. But the injury, the idea that there's an injury makes sense. I gotta say, though, is that if a lion's jaws are so injured that from 2 years prior or a year prior to being killed, that's a long time before these camps of people showed up. Now, maybe it's scavenging on other stuff and that's how they're getting along, but I'm curious about how they got to the time frame that they assigned for the age. The researcher talked about the fact that they saw there was erosion on the teeth around it, and the bone in the socket had begun to grow back where the tooth was at. That's how they determined it.
That makes sense.
But, does that mean that it was painful and incapable of using its jaw? That's what I'm questioning.
Well, I mean, maybe it's a combination of things. I'm just advocating for all of these tonight. Maybe it's a combination of, you know, the railroad construction, it made the slave trade take a step back. So maybe what was happening is, you know, the slave trade was getting slaves picked off by these lions before when they were going through their territory.
Bodies.
Or their dead bodies, or maybe a combination of both. And if you're partaking in an illegal slave trade, you're not necessarily going to be like, yeah, it's weird, the lions keep stealing these people that I totally own.
Mm-hmm.
You're just going to say, oh, it's the cost of business. Oh, no.
Yeah, apparently it was the traders were Arab, the slave traders that were coming through that area. And that's the route that they were taking.
I mean, So I guess that would help us get to this timeline of they had been living on humans or
but the slave trade didn't start getting knocked back as much until the rail line was finished.
Okay. Well, I mean, that still doesn't necessarily present a problem, but it also, I guess on top of that, you can say, but on the other hand, if one of them drug a goat that was attached to a railroad tie, you wouldn't think that if their mouth was in intense pain, they'd be able to drag that kind of weight.
Uh-huh.
I think that probably they did, you know, maybe it got a little better over time, or maybe they were just used to it.
Or
they're just really badass and tough.
Or Patterson was a liar.
He
edited a word out there.
Because that's the other thing, is that I have to imagine that he wrote these accounts, at least the original versions that went into the papers. He probably sat down and wrote those from his journal or memory, and then, of course, had to spice them up to get them bought.
Yeah, well, it's not as interesting a story if you say, these two lions were taking out humans because they were too sickly to take on any other prey, and I totally killed them. It's way more, you know, badass to say, yeah, and it was capable of dragging a goat attached to a railroad tie. It was so strong and virile that I, you know, and I took it down with 9 shots.
Mm-hmm.
That's a way better story.
It is a better story, but I was going to say, if I was going to put a goat out there for bait, I would totally tie it to a railroad tie. It makes sense, because it's going to slow the lion way down when he goes to drag it away.
Apparently not slow enough for Patterson to shoot it.
By the way, I do want to point out with the whole, it took 9 shots to take it down. He says that with the last 2 shots, he shot it in the head with the last 2 shots, but it was so aggressive and it wanted him so badly that it was leaning against a branch or a log and was gnawing at the branch or log, this hunk of wood, as it was trying to get at it. Have you ever seen like a cat that lays there that's trying to get something and it's biting at it?
Yeah.
Except this is the big version of it. that's what he's saying. But so these are things that I point out. I bring up these descriptions in his story because it makes me stop and go, huh.
Yeah, he may have punched it up a little bit, but
yeah, that's really colorful writing to me.
Yeah.
Really colorful writing is actually what gives us our final theory, which, because we actually have one more, which is that they were bloodthirsty animals who had developed a taste for humans and or maybe were just insane. Because that's what Patterson said.
I'd say they acted pretty sane, if you ask me.
Yeah, I don't think if totally insane, they would have just been coming into the camp constantly running through everything. And instead, they were very stealthy, and they were really, really smart in how they went about stealing or getting their food. I shouldn't say stealing, getting their food.
Yeah.
So I don't think that the Tsavo lions were insane. I mean, like I said, he made a career out of hunting other lions. After that, there's all these supposed man-eaters that had killed a couple of people. I think that part of the problem, though, is that all these supposed man-hunters we're expanding. And we're expanding into their natural territory. And what happens when humans and other animals collide? Mm-hmm. Well, usually the people lose at first because we're dumb and ignorant. But eventually, just through sheer numbers, we win.
And superior firepower. Yeah.
Yes. And so I think that that's why all of these lions that are called man-killers and man-eaters and insane, they're actually not. They're pushed to a breaking point, and they have to survive because that's what their natural instinct is.
Yeah.
So
I would agree with that.
My personal opinion is that I think that these I kind of fall in line with the slave trade. I think that gave them an idea of humans, at least for these two particularly in that area, mm-hmm. as, oh, this is a normal food source. Okay. The other ones I'm not so sure about.
I like the cattle plague.
Yeah. Cattle plague is good.
Yeah. I mean, not like I don't like it.
I'm Facebook friends with the cattle plague.
We're besties.
And they put up the best posts ever.
We go out to drink sometimes. It's great.
Oh, cattle plague tales, the best jokes.
Really? It's true.
Yeah.
How about Christ. You, Joe?
Maybe some combination of all of them, even. I hate to sound wishy-washy here. The cattle plague, I think, is a good one because, you know, they had plenty to snack on. They didn't mm-hmm. need to actually go eat people. And then, boom, all that goes. And, well, you got to go find food somewhere. And these guys come waltzing in. So, ha-ha.
Conveniently driving right through the middle of their territory.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what do you expect?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All righty. Yeah,
mystery solved.
There we go. So let's go ahead and give the important bits that I know people really like to hear us repeat every week.
Oh, yeah.
We have a website.
iTunes, email. Ah.
Yeah, we have a website. The website is thinkingsidewayspodcast.com, where, of course, you can look at links that we will put up for some of our research, as well as listening to any of the past episodes. We are on iTunes, as well as a bunch of the other streaming services like Google Play and any other service that you might be able to use. If you're on iTunes, do take the time to leave a comment and a rating. That's how other people find us.
Good rating.
Preferably a good one. If you've got something that you don't agree with, write us an email so that we can have a discussion about it, because we can't talk through comments. They're a one-way conversation.
And what is that email?
Well, that email is something that I'll tell you in a minute.
Well, fine.
I was going to say, if you're using any of the other streaming services and they allow you to comment and rating, do the same as we asked to do in iTunes. That way, everybody who's using that service can find out about us. If you want to write us an email, you can do that. The email address that Joe was prompting me to give you is thinkingsidewayspodcast@gmail.com. We take story suggestions, we take feedback, we take general accolades. We will always respond to every email, though it may take us days to get to you, and that's not a reflection of you. That's our workload, but we respond to everybody.
And by the way, if you're listening, say, 5 years from now, we've got 20 million listeners. That might not be the case anymore.
Yeah, FYI. Yeah. But currently, as of this recording, that's
as of 2016.
Doing. Yes. Now, we are on social media, so we have a Facebook page and a Facebook group. So like the page, join the group. There's always fun stuff going on there. We're on Twitter, Thinking Sideways. Devin's always sending out weird Snapchat photos of herself.
Truth.
Because it's a thing now.
Yeah.
We have a subreddit, so there are conversations. If you're a Redditor, that's a place for you to go as well. And last but most importantly, not least, for support of the show, we have a couple of different ways that you can do that. You can buy merchandise, so shirts, stickers, anything like that.
Coffee mugs.
Coffee mugs. Those are available through Zazzle, which there's a link to that on the website in the right-hand panel. If you want to contribute directly to the show, we have PayPal. So you can make a one-time donation through PayPal of whatever you are able or comfortable with. If you want to go ahead and do a recurring donation, that's going to happen through Patreon. It's patreon.com/thinkingsideways. Patreon is a system that, or a service where you pledge how much you want to contribute, and every time we put out a new episode, that's what you're going to contribute. So I say that so that if you say, I'm going to give you 10 bucks, and you put that into Patreon, that's going to be 10 bucks an episode, and we put out 4 episodes a month on a normal month. So that's going to be, you got to do the math there. So whatever works for you and you are comfortable with, and by no means is any of this required. It is totally voluntary, and we appreciate everybody who has and is currently donating the show. It's amazing how much easier that makes that for all of us.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, it does cost a little bit.
It does.
Yeah.
So that having been said, we're going to get out of here and look at Joe's crystal cat collection that he has bought with donations from Patreon. Mm-hmm. No, I'm just kidding. We are, though, going to get out of here. And so we will talk to you guys all next week.
Yeah, meow.
Let's go see your menagerie. Mm-hmm. Your glass menagerie.
Ooh, that's right.
Let's go to the catacombs because it's perfect.
Oh, man. I don't have anything.
Roar!